few issues induce more hysteria in the domestic body politic than abortion. And so the leaking of a draft opinion that would repeal Roe versus Wade, that apparently has the support of five justices, is an absolute political bombshell. As emotions run high, tempers flare, and as one of my friends and colleagues said recently, we are now allowed to talk about women again in the context of women's rights and not birthing persons. It's worth stepping back to just assess what is potentially at stake if Roe is repealed. I have basically three points that I will be making in this podcast. First, repealing Roe v. Wade is a good thing, not just in terms of abortion jurisprudence, but in terms of, in the long run, lowering the temperature on cultural issues in a very divided society. Number two, the impact of Roe v. Wade is not likely to be as decisive as either pro-life or pro-choice people believe that it will be. And number three, if Democrats are expecting the repeal of Roe v. Wade to save them in November, they are living in a fantasy world. I'm Dr. Nolte, and this is Blind Politics. And welcome, podcast listeners, to another episode of Blind Politics with Dr. Nolte. I am Dr. A.J. Nolte, Assistant Professor of Government at Regent University's Robertson School of Government. Please remember that you can rate and subscribe to this on your favorite podcast provider. Please give us 5-star ratings if you like what we are doing here. You can also find us on Facebook at Blind Politics with Dr. Nolte and on the Facebook and Instagram feeds of the Robertson School of Government. Okay, so leaked on Monday night that there is an opinion. The text of the opinion was leaked. It was a draft opinion circulated in February, written by Justice Samuel Alito, that apparently, according to the source, had the support of still five justices as of last week. Now, there's a couple of caveats here that we need to put in. Caveat number one, a draft opinion in February is not necessarily the text of the final opinion that comes out. We were expecting a ruling on Dobbs in June or July. So this draft is already a couple of months old. All right, that's the first caveat that we need to keep in mind. We don't know actually where the opinion is at this point. And caveat number two, the person who leaked this almost certainly leaked it because they had ulterior motives, possibly to try to influence one or more of the justices to move off of their opinion on Roe. The precedent here being that there was a leak, not the leak of an opinion, mind you, but the leak of a possibility that Roberts was going to strike down Obamacare, and he eventually caved to pressure. Now, that being said, Roberts was not one of the five justices who was considered to be supportive of this. And Roberts is big into the integrity of the court. So he's not going to be favorably impressed by whoever leaked this. He knows what people are doing at this point. He's been Chief Justice now for a lot longer. Okay, the Obamacare thing was 2012. That's 10 years ago. He's going to be a lot more confident in his role as the Chief Justice. And if anything, leaking this to try to convince one of the justices to waver, I could see Roberts joining the opinion as a middle finger to whoever did this, because Roberts does not like the idea of anybody trying to politically pressure the court. The fact that this is partially his fault because of him caving on Obamacare is beside the point. It's been long enough now, and I think he's got enough of a position now of being used to being the Chief Justice and defending the Supreme Court. He's going to regard this, I believe, as an assault on the Supreme Court, because it is. And so we will see what happens from there. All right. With those caveats in place, let's assume that this opinion or something like it, is the final opinion. I'm not going to break down into the legalese of this because it's just a draft, and if this does become the opinion, we're going to get a panel of folks from the law school, I promise you, whenever Dobbs does come out, to look at this. So we are not going to do a full textual analysis of the opinion. What I want to do, though, is just give an immediate take on the impact, the political impact, the social impact, etc., if this is the decision. Okay, first of all, repealing Roe versus Wade would be good. It would be a good thing. It would be a good thing for America. It would be a good thing. It's not, and I'm not saying this just because I'm pro-life. Okay, I think repealing Roe versus Wade would be a good thing for the pro-life movement, but I also think the pro-life movement has made this such a goal that, like, are we going to end up being the dog that caught the car here? Because there's a lot of work that we need to be done after Roe was repealed. Roe is not the end. Somebody said on Twitter recently that the pro-life movement has been, like, fighting for 15 years so that they can even start to have the fight about abortion. Because what Roe essentially did is it took abortion and abortion politics outside of the legislative process and imposed a national standard where there was not a national consensus. And whenever you impose a national standard where there's not a national consensus, you are going to cause increased political tension. Okay. As someone who is personally very pro-life and would be committed to that in a policy standpoint, I would like to see widespread, if not banning, then at least high restrictions on abortion nationwide. Okay, that would be my preferred policy outcome. I think that abortion is a moral evil. I think it's the murder of an innocent human being. I do not think that it has anything to do with women's rights. In fact, I think that it commodifies and objectifies women in a lot of ways. Particularly if you look at sex selective abortion, which is a thing that we need to look at right now. Baby girls get aborted at a higher rate than baby boys. Non-white people get aborted at a higher rate than white people. Okay, so all those race and class and gender things the left likes to talk about, abortion is ground zero for that. So not only is it immoral, but it is racist, it is sexist, it is classist, it is every evil that the left claims to hate, but they love abortion. Okay, and my preferred policy outcome would be to snap my fingers and we just get rid of it. It's also a barbaric practice, and I think we're moving on from it as a society. We are increasingly having technology where babies can survive outside the womb sooner. We are, I think, moving to, there are non-invasive forms of birth control, if that's your preference. You know, I don't necessarily approve of that, you know, some of those forms of birth control as much. From a moral perspective, I'm not talking about like generic birth control, but, you know, I don't see a lot of consensus, even in red states, for people regulating RU486, okay? And so that's like a cultural fight that the anti-abortion movement, and I have no problem saying I'm anti-abortion. I have no problem saying I'm pro-birth, any of that stuff. I don't care. You know, but that's a fight culturally that, like, again, we are far from being a pro-life country, okay? And there's a lot of work to be done on the pro-life side, even if Roe gets repealed. Okay, so I'm kind of talking down Roe repeal here for a second because I don't want pro-lifers to get complacent if it happens. But the fact is, it would be a good thing for the country. Roe was a terrible decision, legally. Like, it's bad. There's no constitutional right there. It's implied in such a vague, contradictory way. It's the Supreme Court essentially legislating from the bench. It is the example par excellence of legislating from the bench. They created something out of whole cloth that did not exist. It's not in the Constitution. It was not envisioned by anybody among the founders. It was not part of the original public meaning of the Constitution. It's not constitutional. And it took the contentious, morally challenging issue of abortion out of the hands of the people and their legislatures and put them in the hands of 9 unelected white men. That's what happened. That's what Roe did. Okay? Everybody who's defending it today does not actually know what it does. I am firmly convinced that the vast majority of people who say they support Roe versus Wade don't actually know what Roe did and what repealing it would do. You had 9 unelected white men in black robes, 7 of whom voted for this thing that took abortion policy out of the hands of the people and their legislators. Okay? There was not a universal ban on abortion within the United States before Roe versus Wade. It was not a federal issue. Texas and New York had very different policies on abortion before Roe versus Wade. It was not a federal issue. It was a state issue. And states with different cultures and different values had different perspectives on abortion, and that was reflected in legislation. Okay? It's almost like letting some of these really intense cultural issues work themselves out over time is a much better strategy. That's not what happened. So what happens if Roe gets repealed? Well, you're going to see some states that are going to have abortion up to the moment of birth, and you're going to have some states that have a total ban. But the vast majority of states are going to be somewhere in between. Newsflash, most countries in Europe, most civilized Western countries, as our friends on the left always like to refer them to when they talk about things like universal healthcare or other policies that they like, most of those countries have more restrictive abortion policies than we do because of Roe. Okay, so what's going to probably happen is in most states, abortion restriction and legislation is going to look a lot more like Europe than it does like America right now. Okay, because you're going to see some increased incremental. I suspect the average for the country is probably going to be somewhere between 15 to 20 weeks as the threshold, beyond which you can't get an abortion. Which, if you look at the polling, yes, 70-some% of people say they support Roe versus Wade not being overturned. But that's also because they don't know what it means and what it does. And why do I say that? Because in the same polling, majorities support the states being able to make their own abortion decisions, which Roe prevents. 67% support a 20-week ban on abortion, which the Roe and Casey precedent would cast a dim view on. Majorities support other restrictions, which the Roe and Casey regime have not allowed. So here's the reality. You have a small percentage of the population that agrees with me that we should not have any abortion whatsoever. You have a small percentage of the population that agrees with the entirety of the Democratic Party in terms of their platform and their elected officials, that we should have abortion absolutely on demand. And that percentage of the population is highly concentrated in a demographic that does not get abortions, right? White, suburban, upper class women who don't go to church. That's the demographic that's the most likely to support unrestricted abortion, and they don't actually tend to get abortions, right? So they're supporting abortions for other people. And the vast majority of the population falls somewhere in between. So what happens when Roe is repealed is that the vast majority of the population is going to see their preferences reflected more accurately in the abortion policies of the states and localities in which they live. That's generally speaking a good thing on a culturally divisive issue. Okay, so that's point number one. I actually think that repealing Roe versus Wade will not necessarily turn the temperature down, but will allow for policy on abortion to reflect the actual views of the American people as they are currently, right? Because the people are now going to have to figure out what they think about abortion. That's probably a good thing, right? We need to have a national consensus. And if that national consensus is that we can't have one and that all the states need to be different, I think that actually turns the temperature down because it allows for a certain amount of variation. And so, yeah, I think that's probably where we're headed. And I think that's a good thing. What I prefer is that my preferred policy outcome? No. Is that better than what we currently have? Yes. And do I think we have a long, if we're from the pro-life perspective, we still have a lot of work to do and a long way to go to get to that preferred policy outcome? Yeah, absolutely. So Roe is not the end, it's the end of the beginning. But it is still a positive step forward. And it allows for those, and it also allows for those policies to be tested as well. People make a lot of claims about what will happen if states ban abortion that we have not actually, you know, we don't have data on. And I'm not entirely convinced that those claims are legit or are based on anything other than sort of cultural fears. Now, what's the impact of Roe going to be in terms of politics and culture and so on and so forth? I think the impact is probably not going to be as much as everybody thinks it is. Once people figure out exactly what's going to happen, and what's going to happen is not a whole lot. The reality of the situation is that for most people in most of the country, not much is going to change. Some states have trigger legislation that that as soon as Roe is repealed, they're going to ban abortions. The dirty little secret is a lot of those states don't have many abortion providers to begin with. So people are already, if they're going to get abortions, they're going out of state in many of those states. You know, Missouri, for example, Missouri's going to ban abortions. I don't think there are any abortion clinics in Missouri. I remember reading that last year that they don't have any, right? So you're talking about maybe one or two clinics shutting down in a lot of these states. That's not a dramatic change. It's not like all of a sudden abortion is going to be illegal in New York or California, states in which there are already a lot of these clinics. You're going to see some mild shifts in policy in red states. You may see some shifts in policies in swing states, but swing states are going to probably have swingy policies. And they're going to have policies that are broadly popular. I think that like a state like Pennsylvania, you're going to see a 15 or 20 week ban. Right, it's a swing state, you know, there's people on both extremes. That's probably about where you're going to end up. I could see Virginia ending up there, 15 to 20 week ban, somewhere in that range. I don't see them going any further than that, for sure. And again, that's not because that's my policy preference. This is me trying to analyze this in terms of how all of this is going to shake out. There's actually a middle ground on abortion that's pretty popular, and that's where I think most of the swing states are going to end up. Right, so you're going to have some red states that have total bans. You're going to have some blue states that have total, the opposite, no restrictions whatsoever, codified. Where things are going to get interesting, legally speaking, is when we talk about fetal personhood. I think some states are going to be very explicit about saying that the unborn have rights and rights of personhood. I think there are going to be some states about explicitly saying the opposite. So the one area where I could see this really being actually like a massive constitutional issue coming down the line is you'll now have different definitions of personhood in different states. That's not something we've seen in a long time, like since the early 1860s. So that's a big one. But I don't necessarily see that particular issue rearing its head for a while yet, because it's going to take a while for the dust to settle and the smoke to clear and for us to figure out really where we are on this. And in what kind of case would those dueling conceptions of fetal personhood come before the courts? I think that's uncertain as of right now. But that's going to be an issue. And that's not going to be a majority of states, I would say, on either extreme of that. Majority of states are going to be unclear in terms of when is the unborn human the person, right? When is the unborn baby a person and when not? And in what ways does that apply? But you will see some stark clarity on either end of the spectrum from deep red and deep blue states. And so that's going to be... And by the way, this personhood question is actually really important. And it's not just about abortion. We've got a lot of biotech things coming down the pike. We've got a lot of questions about other modifications for human beings that are both technical and are technological and biotechnological and all these types of things. It'd probably be good to get some clarity on that before we start having to wrestle with those issues. So it's going to be an ugly fight, but it's probably an important one. There are certain things as a society that you kind of need to know where you stand. And I don't think that's going to really be coming into play in the next couple of years. So I don't see an immediate change for most people in most places. Abortion rates have been falling, just like birth rates of premarital sex, rates of sex in general, which is the intrinsic, I mean, you're not having an abortion unless you're having those things, you know, rates of pregnancy and sexual contact and all those types of things happening first, right? So I don't know that it's going to be as dramatic of an impact as it would have been in, like, let's just say when Casey was actually decided in 1989 or 1990. Right in that time period, that would have been huge because that's when abortion was like at its peak and you could have seen dramatic differences. I'm not saying it's not important and I'm not saying it's not a huge win, but I think because of the emotionality of this, if you look at it practically, it's probably not going to have quite as much of an impact as people think. Now, the one area where I think it will have definitely less impact than people think is in terms of politics. You're already seeing a bunch of Democrats frothing at the mouth about how this is going to save them from the evil horde of Republicans because pro-choice women are going to turn out for them and save the election. Pro-choice women don't turn out and save elections. Okay? That doesn't happen. That's not a thing that happens. They've been there, done that, got the t-shirt, tried this playbook, and it has failed. All right? Let me give you just a couple of examples. 2014, Colorado Senate race. State where pro-choice women were believed to be the key to Democratic dominance in perpetuity. And so Mark Udall, who was the incumbent, played the war on women card to the hilt, to the point where they jokingly referred to him as Mark Uterus because he made so many comments about the war on women. Guess what? He lost, because that's not what people cared about at the time. 2021, Glenn Youngkin, Virginia, considered to be a pro-choice state. Pro-choice women considered to be an essential part of the Democrats' coalition in suburban areas, in Fairfax County, in Loudoun County, in Prince William County, in... you know, parts of Virginia Beach and Hampton Roads. And so what did Terry McAuliffe run on? Donald Trump and the Texas abortion bill. Did Terry McAuliffe win? No. Okay. If this is the strategy that Democrats want to pursue in a midterm, go for it, because it's never worked for them before. And if you're talking about abortion, when gas prices are like above $4.50, right? When bread prices are going up, because bread prices are going to go up, people, this summer. I don't know that the full commodity crunch has hit yet of the fact that 25% of the world's grain supply, you know, wheat supply and so on is gone, but it's going to happen. You want to talk about abortion in an environment when we're headed toward a recession, you know, and make your campaign a noun, a verb, and the Republicans' war on women, and Republicans are talking about gas prices and inflation and the economy. Be my guest, I think, from a Republican, if I'm talking about it from a Republican perspective, I'm desperately hoping this is what Democrats do, because people don't vote on abortion. This is actually very frustrating for pro-lifers, because there's a significant percentage of minority voters who agree with us on social issues but don't vote that way. But the people that are going to vote for Democrats on abortion, probably going to vote for Democrats anyway. Now, the question is, do those people turn out? Do they see a slight turnout bump? So you could see maybe New Hampshire, Maggie Hassan could be a little bit better off because of this. You could see maybe a little bit of a bump for Democrats maybe in Nevada, although Nevada is kind of all over the place. There's a large Latino population, and I think, you know, increasing turnout among suburban women is probably not going to be the decisive factor there. I think it's more going to be which direction are those Latino voters going to go, and how far are they going to follow that trend of going toward the Republicans that we saw in 2020. Nevada moved toward the Republicans in 2020, and I think it was mostly a factor of Latino voters. Maybe this helps Democrats hold a couple of House seats in places like New York. I could see something like that. So on the margins, yeah. On the margins, it could help Democrats. But is this going to save them? No, absolutely not. And the other factor is, if they beat the drums for the next couple of months about what a horror show this is going to be and how instantly we're going to revert to The Handmaid's Tale and, you know, women are going to lose all their rights, and then Roe versus Wade is repealed, and in the lives of most Americans, not much changes as a result, does that diminish the impact of it immediately on the elections? The third reason I don't think it's going to save the Democrats is because the Democratic Party has showed such staggering incompetence and an ability to blunder its way into failing on issues that should have been an absolute mark of success for them, that they could screw this up. They could go too far the opposite direction. They could lean too far into the abortion thing and put themselves outside the mainstream. They could really start pushing things like court packing, which is very unpopular, and trying to change the composition of the court. And, you know, using this as an excuse to do all the other things they want to do that are very unpopular. A lot of the reason that people are saying we don't necessarily want to see Roe repealed is because it's a change and people don't like change and things could be different, I think. And so if things are really not that much different after the fact, which is what I expect to happen, I think it's going to be a blip. So Democrats could, thinking they have a strong hand, overplay it massively, because that's what they tend to do. You know, I'm not expecting Republicans to handle it well either. It's not like they're a much more competent party, but quite frankly, Democrats have more to lose right now. That's all my instant analysis of this. I will have a lot more if this ends up being the opinion. This may not even be the opinion. And that's a whole other thing. If this isn't the opinion, if one of the justices does cave, and let's say there's a decision now to uphold Mississippi, but sort of keep the Roe framework intact somehow, by narrowing that undue burden standard, which is what I thought initially was going to happen. If that's what happens at this point, the emotional reaction on the conservative pro-life side could be actually very bad. You know, the whole reason why a lot of people supported Trump, for example, was Supreme Court picks. If it's one of Trump's justices that ends up siding with Roberts on some way to uphold the Mississippi law, but keep Roe intact, yeah, that's not going to go well. So it will be interesting to see what happens. I would say, based on this, gun to my head, it is more likely than it was before that Roe is, in fact, repealed. But we will see. I think it would be good, like I said. I don't want people who are on the pro-life side to get their hopes up. I don't want people who are on the pro-choice side to think that this is like the Armageddon and the end of all things and like The Handmaid's Tale hath descended, because that's not actually what's going to happen. But I would think it would be a good thing. This is an issue that needs to be decided by the people and not by the courts. And I think the last 50 years should have made that clear, that our politics have not gotten better as a result of the courts being involved in what ultimately is a decision where it needs to be adjudicated legislatively. So that's going to be a wrap for this episode. Please remember you can rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. And please leave us those 5-star ratings if you enjoy what we do here. For Blind Politics, this is Dr. Nolte, signing off.